The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
You just patted yourself on the back.
I'm losing you, buddy. I don't know what you're trying to say.
You're just so great. I love your show.
Am I close?
No.
Does that comfort you?
No.
I'm sorry, and I'm going to confess it, because I'm a holy guy.
I'm a little intimidated to talk to you because you used a lot of big words.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
You came to the wrong place. You came to the wrong place if you're looking for deep answers.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
There's method to my madness. I don't want to give deep answers because I want to be relatable. You heard that young lady who said she didn't understand me because I used big words, that I was magniloquent, you know, esoteric and pedagogical. Right. So, I'm just trying to be straight, down to earth, a little fluffy. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. This is The Doctor Is In, call-in program, 1 hour long, but given the breaks, given starting late and quitting early, it's about 52 minutes. Given the total amount of usable advice, it's about 4 minutes. That's okay. It's kind of like weightlifting. You know, it takes you an hour and a half to go through a workout, and if you measure the amount of time you actually spend pushing the weight, it comes to about 6 minutes, like a football game. Like 11 minutes of actual action in a football game. That's kind of like what it is here. Usable advice, about 4 minutes. But if your goal is to get in place in one of those 4 minutes, 877-573-7825. Now, yesterday, we left an awful lot of folks on the line. We truly did. And they can call back and be first up. And if there's a tie here, we can do rock, paper, scissors. Or if you're Italian, we can play the game Mora. But you're first up, if you like. Tells me it wasn't all that urgent yesterday. Impulse calling. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. I'm a psychologist. I was in the office this morning. A lot of times I go to the office before I come to the program here. Now, I do very different things in the office than I do on the program, obviously. In the office, you can do therapy. In the office, you can diagnose. In the office, you can explore. In the office, you can ask an hour's worth of questions and find out what's going on the layers of the onion. Well, here on a program, you can't do that. You can educate, give a few thoughts, maybe something that's helpful. But I count on the ripple effect. You know what the ripple effect is? I made it up. The ripple effect essentially is if you make a small change in your life, it can ripple heading outward to a number of areas that improve. Well, let me just go on a monologue on that then, because I wasn't going to do that for a monologue. I was going to do something else. But I've decided. Now, if I decided to do that as a monologue a minute ago, that tells you how much preparation I do for monologues. Let me give you an example of the ripple effect. Let's say a parent comes in my office and totally frustrated at this 5, 6, 7-year-old kid who just is defiant and argumentative and unpleasant, just keeps chaos in the home, and the parent is feeling like a failure. The parent is thinking, maybe I'm not suited for this parenting thing. I'm awful. The tone of the family, if there are other siblings, sometimes the tone of the marriage is very negative. Why? Well, because this 5, 6, 7-year-old has a lot more power to create turbulence than he should have. All right. So let's say that we talk a little bit and I find out that the parent really has not at this point anyway gained authority. And I give them a discipline suggestion, something very simple to do. And then I give them the backup. In other words, if you do this regarding this child's defiance and he escalates, he resists, he refuses, then you do this. You always got to have a backup. I learned that way long time ago doing therapy. In when we were in school, they gave us techniques and formulas and ideas for parents. Not too many of which I use anymore, but most of them I've developed over time. And the implication was, if you give a parent these ideas, the kid will cooperate with them. Well, now, if you've got a discipline problem on your hands, and you attempt to say, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to write 50 sentences every time you mistreat your sister. As though the kid's going to say, oh, all right, I most certainly will. Thank you for suggesting it. If this is a kid just defying you, he's going to defy your discipline. So I had to come up with backups, powerful backups. I suggest these to the parents. Here's the backup. They come in 2 weeks later. About half the time, they'll say things like wildly better, dramatically better. I can't believe I'm living with the same kid. Now, this is mostly true with the younger kids. The older kids don't respond like this, but the younger kids do. And then they'll say things like, he's happier. He doesn't seem so agitated like he was. And my spouse and I are not fighting like we did over discipline. He's playing with his siblings more, and they want to play with him. The other day, he told me how much he loved me, and he gave me a hug and a kiss, and he just did it spontaneously, and I hadn't had one of those for I can't remember how long. The ripple effect. If you improve one aspect of a marriage, parenting, a relationship with a parent, an adult, you're an adult, they're an adult relationship. One thing that you change has a ripple effect. It brings about positive changes in a whole bunch of other areas that you never thought would happen. Say you decide, new approach in your marriage. When your spouse tells you something you really don't want to hear about you, instead of defending yourself, you sit and you listen and you ask. Give me some examples, please. How do I do that? Tell me how I do that. I want to understand what I'm doing. You attempt to really take in what your spouse is telling you is wrong with you. You want to hear it. You don't want to dispute it. You don't want to argue with it. You're not going to challenge it. You're not going to say, well, so do you. You're not going to do any of that. You're just going to listen and try to figure out why they're saying this. I'm telling you, that would have a ripple effect on your marriage. You may find out that your spouse will be more inclined to apologize. Why? Well, you're not being defensive. You may find out that your spouse, at the end of all of this, will say, well, it's not really that bad. I suppose I'm overreacting. And you're thinking to yourself, wow, you started out this conversation pretty much telling me what's wrong with me, and by the end you're saying that you are getting carried away, and you owe me an apology. It changes things. It changes the dynamics, the interaction between the parent and the child and the spouse and the spouse and the parent and the grandparent. It changes all of that. The ripple effect. And in a lot of respects, that's kind of what goes on here on this program. I can't do therapy here. I can't delve into all of the factors and the variables and the complexities of situations. There are very few formulaic responses. But perhaps if we give one or two that shifts a perspective or gives a little tiny technique, it can improve areas you never thought would improve. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call. I'm Dr. Ray. I'm not going to have any Ripple. No, that's really cheap wine, and I don't drink anyway, but, you know, if I had Ripple on the show, not that kind of Ripple.
Don't touch that dial. Dr. Ray will be back.
What's the deal with Dr. Ray? I mean, is he a psychologist or a comedian?
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to setonhome.org. setonhome.org.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Are you fed up with the current healthcare system, paying too much for your healthcare cost? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. Visit SolidarityHealthShare.org to join like-minded Catholics in sharing medical expenses.
You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of. Can't figure out why my arms are so weak. I don't know. I did that push-up last year. It didn't seem to have any effect whatsoever. Robert from Missouri. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Dr. Ray. It's good to get through to you.
Thank you, sir.
Just rather difficult questions in regards to forms of schizophrenia.
Robert, wait a minute. If I'm smart enough, no question is difficult.
Okay. I hope this isn't Ripple time.
All right.
But anyway, sometimes I wish there is a schizophrenic I could get in the pond when it rippled. Okay. Anyway, what are the differences of these schizophrenia? Chronic paranoid schizophrenic, panimmune schizophrenic, inverse schizophrenic, and schizoaffective.
Okay. Well, chronic is a term that can be used describing any label. It just means long time been around. Okay. And sometimes they define it as more than 6 months. Sometimes it's just informally used as chronic. In other words, it's been here off and on since you were 19 years old, kind of thing. Acute means it is happening right at this moment. It is rather intense, and it has not necessarily moved into a chronic long-term phase, although it can. Something can be acute and then move into a long-term phase. It's all just a matter of time, okay? Paranoid schizophrenia means that you have ideas about either persecution or people watching you. You feel that you are being basically sized up. You're feeling that you're being watched. I'm repeating myself. And these feelings and thoughts are pretty strong. And nobody can talk you out of them. They're kind of wired into your brain. They're irrational, and they are impervious to being dissuaded. Now, schizoaffective is an old term, and it means that there's a component to your thought disorder, and thought disorder essentially means that your brain is not working quite right. There's chemical upheaval. We don't know all what causes it, but the affective component means there is an emotional component, a mood component, so that you can be depressed, for example, at the same time you're not thinking clearly. Or you can be manic or hypomanic, in other words, not quite crazy manic, at the same time you're not thinking clearly. So there's two components. There's a thought problem and there's a mood problem. That's schizoaffective. Now, what were those other two you described?
Pain. Excuse me, sir. Pain, immune schizophrenic, and inverse schizophrenia.
Where did you hear those terms?
Well, I think pain, immune schizophrenic, you need my Latin for that, medicine. I think it's my Latin. And for other schizophrenics, they say Locetain or some other medicine.
Where did you hear those labels, Robert? Pain, immune, and inverse?
Oh, reading psychiatry material many years ago.
I was going to say, yeah, I'm not sure those are official, okay?
Yeah. My understanding of pain, immune, schizophrenia is to have pain, so much pain in you, yet it does not make you paralyzed, and it does not make you really complain about it. It's kind of like a feeling of, I don't know how to put it, the pain is real, you know, rather if it's a stigmata or an internal cross or something like that. The pain is endurable. It's not paralyzing, like I said, and you can definitely feel it, but it's not a flesh wound exactly.
I think what you're referring to is a delusional state where that the pain, as you say, is real, but for whatever the reason, it doesn't register, or it doesn't register with the intensity that it should register, and that's part of the thought disorder. When you have a thought disorder, it can affect thinking in virtually every sphere, depending upon the person. And so if someone, say yourself, and I'm assuming this is something you went through, if someone just doesn't seem to be aware of real pain that they should be experiencing, then somehow they're dissociating, that's a fancy psychological word, from the pain in their head, and that's part of their delusional system. Okay, so I don't know if it's a particular type of schizophrenia. I'm not familiar with that. I can only imagine that's a label put on a certain kind of schizophrenic delusion. I got to run, Robert, but thanks for the call, my friend. Take good care. We have an anonymous caller. She's from New Hampshire, mom of two. And, well, I think she wants me to interfere with her parenting, at least at this point. And I'm probably old enough to be your parents. Hi, anonymous mom.
Hi there.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to, instead of when a mom calls in who's anonymous, we're going to just call it Anonymom. What do you think?
I like it. It's good.
How old are your children?
2 and 3.
They're interfering with you already, huh?
Since day one, pretty much. But, you know, I mean, they're obviously good intentions.
Are they? Give me some sense of the interference. Is it advice that you don't particularly like? Is it criticism? Is it intrusive? Describe it for me.
It's all of the above, but I guess like the best summary I can make of it is that they have their approach to parenting is very hands-off. So, you know, let the kids go figure it out themselves and, you know, let them work it out, whereas I have a little bit more of a hands-on approach where I try to, you know, help the kids develop some tools to, you know, be able to, I don't think that beating each other up is particularly effective in terms of having my 2 and 3 year old figure out how to share a toy.
I think you're right.
So,
I think you're right.
They disagree with me on a fundamental level. So,
well, we can look at this a couple of ways. One, they are perfectly allowed to disagree with you. And two, you are perfectly allowed to ignore them.
Okay.
How often do they give their unasked for opinion?
Well, often enough. We get together at least once a week and sometimes, you know, 2 or 3 other times during the week to try and, you know, get them some socialization with their cousins. They have a couple other cousins around the same age. So, you know, and I, it seems to be the only parent that really stays in the room with the kids or plays with them or interacts with them. So, but I think there's this mentality that I'm somewhat of a hover mom versus, you know, kind of like letting the kids figure it out on their own. So, you know, I'd say about two or so times a week we have these interactions. And I constantly feel like they're trying to course correct me. Like if they get
well,
my
they are.
Alone without me.
Mom, they are.
Yeah.
They are trying to correct you. So what? You don't have to do anything they say. See, you want them to agree with you and respect your parenting, and they're not going to.
I love that. That's
they're not
great.
Going. You've got plenty of evidence they're not going to. But you can look at them and say, "Mom, I got to do it my way." You need a little sound bite. "No, Mom, I got to handle this my way. Dad, I'm going to do it this way." No, they don't. They don't get to do that, Mom. That's wrong. Well, you know, I think that, you know, what's going to happen is when you do something like that, you're going to find out that what they're going to do is blah, 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 blah. And you just look at them and you smile and you do it your way. Don't argue with them.
I mean, I suppose, you know, that's essentially what I do. But, yeah, no, I guess I do let it get under my skin probably.
Well,
more
sure. You know, that's what you're asking here, Mom. You're not saying, am I okay in parenting my way? You're not asking that. You're saying, how do I make my parents see that my way's a good way? And that's a lot tougher because I don't think you're going to. I think what'll make your parents see that your way is a good way is your children. If they have other grandchildren and you are the quote-unquote stricter mom of their other children, they may find that your kids are a lot more pleasant to be around 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now than the other kids. And maybe they'll put 2 and 2 together that this woman that they thought was a little too strict or a little too hovering or controlling or whatever word they're going to use is actually raising some pretty nice kids.
Well, I hope so. They don't always show that.
No, I don't think so. Well, they think you're wrong.
Yeah.
They think you're not only do they think you're wrong, but they think you're hurting your kids and they think that they might have to correct it. And I think where you're going to have a possible problem, and maybe you haven't experienced this yet, is when they watch the kids themselves, they're going to do it their way.
Yeah, that is a problem sometimes.
Yes, and it's going to be a bigger problem. And at some point, and I've seen this happen so often, at some point, the parent says, I can't have my parents watch my kids anymore. They just let them do anything they want. They just don't supervise well. They heavily permissive. It's just getting rougher as they get older. Yeah, those are decisions, dear. They're gonna put you in the corner with. They're going to make you decide. Remember though, you are mom. They are not. And even if you're wrong, you're mom.
Thank you. Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Vatican II teaches that. Every baptized person is a participant in the threefold office of Jesus, which is priest, prophet, and king. So as priest, Christ is a sanctifier. He effects a reconciliation between divinity and humanity, right, by his great sacrifice on the cross. Every baptized person does indeed participate in that, in the measure that we all have that calling to reconcile divinity and humanity, to bring God to people and people to God. That's true of every baptized person. Vatican II further specifies that the ordained priesthood is different, not only in degree, but in kind. And it has to do with the identification between the ordained priest, I think, and the Mass, and a unique relationship to the sacraments. Every baptized person has a task of reconciling divinity and humanity. The ordained priest does it in this sort of heightened sacramental and Eucharistic way.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Traveling for spring break? You don't have to miss your favorite Ave Maria program. Bookmark AveMariaRadio.net or download the Ave Maria Radio app on your smart device. You can listen to more than a dozen live or recorded Ave Maria Radio shows wherever and whenever you want. On the road, in the line at the amusement park, at the beach, or in the evening after a productive day. Stay connected. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of the doctor is in. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. I forget much of the time to give out the number. I told Andrew Krucek, my producer man, and Eric Dumont, primary call screamer, you guys give it out. Can't give it out all the time. That's rather, it's rather pushy, rather self-absorbed as far as I'm concerned. So Andrew, from now on, will give out the number, and Eric will. I don't know if you'll be able to hear him. All right. The number is 8. Oh, they want all the numbers. Oh, 877-573-7825, 877-57, equal Susan. Pennsylvania. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Thanks for the call.
I didn't even hear that you called my name. All right. I'm calling because I have 7 children, and the fifth child, who is 16 years old, has he's always been a little oppositional, but he's been when he's asked, he will do what I ask him to do, but he does it reluctantly, and it's kind of like a downer for me. But he does it, so we kind of work through that. But when it comes to now, within the past year, he's very oppositional about family prayer time or going to church. And so I just thought maybe I'd pick your brain to see if you can tell me how to approach that with him.
Let's take the part where he does it reluctantly. There's probably still a few of those left, right? Brushes teeth or whatever it is, as long as it doesn't have to do with religion, right?
With what?
Religion. In other words...
He upsets the whole process. So when we're going to church, he's banging doors. He'll kind of push. He's never, like, very, very... violent with that anybody in the family, but he'll push his little brother out of the way and bang the door or slam the door in his face.
Wait a minute, pushing his little brother out of the way, that's not violent?
Well, you know what I mean, like a hip check.
Oh. Is he bigger than his little brother?
Yeah, I mean, they range from 27 down to 5.
So does little brother like this when he gets clobbered by his big brother?
No, and then I get I'm very defensive for the person who's getting picked on, and totally not acceptable. And so then he'll either have to stay with me. He's 16-year-old, has to stay with me, or he's going to have to do something for his brother. And it's, but it's still, it's not like it's a happy time. Now you're going to do something for your brother. Now you're going to go put away his clothes, or now you're going to do the dishes so he doesn't have to do them. And
Susan,
then he gets madder and madder.
You know the problem? You're just a you're just a crappy parent. You know, sweetheart, when you have seven kids, you're going to get a kid by law of averages that is more resistant, more rebellious, more oppositional, okay? And he'll require probably more discipline effort than any of the other six.
Right.
But let's look at, for a second, let's look at the reluctancy factor, even though it sounds like he's getting a little more blatant in his defiance. You remember when our Lord told the parable? He told it to the scribes and the Pharisees, religious leaders. He said, a father asked the son to go work in the vineyard, and the son says, sure, absolutely, I'll go do it. And then he doesn't.
Right.
But then the other one says, no, I don't think so. I don't really feel like it. But then he does. And our Lord asked the religious leaders, so who was more obedient? And they said, well, the one who went and did it. Right. So those parts where your son is reluctant, I wouldn't worry too much about that. I don't care. If you're reluctant and you're doing it, that's fine with me. If you're nasty about it, which it sounds like your son is getting, he's slamming doors and he's elbow and hip checking little brother and all of that stuff. Yeah, he's misbehaving. That's mean. And yeah, I don't want to do prayer. I don't want to go to church. You know, this is your thing. I'm not into this religion thing.
Oh, you sound just like him.
Yeah, I know. Question, though, just as an aside, it's kind of off the track. Does he have a smartphone and does he play computer games?
Both.
Uh-huh. How did I know that?
I don't know.
I know.
But, you know, I have seven children, and six of them are, they're buddying up on the computers. And so the ones that don't live at home anymore, the ones that don't live at home anymore are playing with them on, you know, together.
Well, as long as the games are not vile, but the problem is he doesn't deserve any of that.
No, he doesn't.
Well, then why do you give it to him?
I don't know to what extent. I don't know how. Like, I don't know what. I want to take them. I have no problem taking them.
Well, then what else?
But I don't know. I don't know how to handle that. Like, what does he do then? You know, like.
Well.
So I take away his games and I take away his phone. Well, are we dealing with a kid who's just going to sit in his room, or do I make him do something?
I don't know. Where's your husband?
He's here, and we usually fall into very long discussions, calm, long discussions about how much we love him and how much he's disrupting.
What I'm saying here, though, is, Susan, does your husband back you up?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, then
so
this is
we bought two of your books, and we signed up.
Well, you should be healed by now. You should be healed.
I mean, we don't know how to deal with a child who's so oppositional because he has no reason to be. I don't understand.
I don't understand
what
we're
doing.
You know why he's oppositional? Because it's who he is.
Why?
That's who he is.
Oh, God.
And probably what's happening, and you could make it better or worse by your response to him. And
that's why I called you.
Well, if you got the books will tell you a lot more than what I can say here in this call. You know that.
It's coming on Friday.
Oh, so you haven't gotten them yet?
No.
Oh, see, this is it. People get desperate enough to buy my books. That's the problem. You know, you got to really get desperate. You got to have one kid out of seven that's really pushing you to the wall, and then you go, well, I'll go buy Gnudi's book or whatever that guy's name is. Okay. I hope you got the book.
My biggest question is,
yeah.
My biggest question is, do I force him to go to church with us despite the fact that he caused the turmoil? And do I force him to pray with us?
Yes.
Okay, you know, that's what we're doing.
The prayer thing is harder. Maybe he just has to sit there and be quiet and not disruptive. But here's the difference. Okay, he goes to church and he tells you, I'm not listening, I don't respond, I'm not doing anything, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. If that's what you choose to do, but I'm going to tell you, son, in our home we serve the Lord. In our home, church is worship. It's not gone through the motions. So if you're going to be nasty about it, I'm going to deal with you. I'm going to deal with you as though this is misbehavior. This is mean, what you're doing. You're creating turmoil and chaos for everybody else that's here. Not going to have it, son. When you're old and you don't want religion, okay, that's going to be your business. But right now, you're not going to bully us into saying, well, I guess he doesn't want to. Okay, all right. I'm not saying this will make him love the Lord or love religion. I'm not saying that at all. He may even get more resentful. But
yeah,
you have to, as a parent, have a standard. You know, my daughter's 19. She's almost 20. She lives in our home. I said, Lizzie, you live there, you go to church. That's a given. If you stop going to church, you can't live here. Does she want to go? I don't know. But wait till those books come here, Susan. If you get the one on teens, that'll really help you deal with this defiance. It really will. I'm Dr. A.
How does freedom affect our actions? According to the Catholic Catechism, freedom makes us responsible for every act that we have directly willed. Despite her efforts to place all the blame on the serpent, Eve was directly responsible for initiating and committing original sin. She knew God had forbidden her to eat from the tree of good and evil, yet she did it anyway. Cain deliberately killed his brother Abel. King David deliberately committed both adultery and murder. None of the three were ignorant of the gravity of their acts, and there were no mitigating circumstances that diminished their responsibility. However, David was particularly remorseful when confronted with his guilt. The Catechism tells us that the right to the exercise of freedom, especially in moral and religious matters, is an inalienable requirement for the dignity of the human person. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
He always starts with the good things. You know, the seven letters to the churches and the book of Revelation is a great way to write letters to other people, by the way, or to have conversations with other people. You start with what's going well. You do this, this, and this really well. I love it. Thank you. Here's what you're lacking. And I think for many of us as men, what the Lord's communicating at that second part of the letter or the second part of the conversation is, here's what we're lacking. You don't ever spend enough time with me. You have no idea what I'm trying to offer you in the gift of my friendship. Or if you do, you don't make time for it. And if you would but come to me, I would change your life like that. But you don't come. Not with the regularity that I want you to come. Not with the ardor and the fervor and the passion that I want you to come. I have a hunch, like more than a hunch, that's what he says to me. And I got a hunch that's what he would say to many of us.
I am so frustrated. I put out $250 to my health club for a membership. That was, what, 8 months ago? I haven't lost a pound yet. And the only thing I can figure out is, apparently you have to go there. The only thing I'm thinking of. Okay, we got some pretty heavy calls up there. And I want to get to them, so please, I ask you for your patience. But Lindsay from Melbourne, Florida, I don't want to say she disagrees with me, but she's saying, Dr. Ray, there's perhaps a different interpretation on this. So I'm going to go to Lindsay because she's close enough to disagreement to leapfrog the line. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, dear. Okay.
Great.
What is your sense on this?
I just, you know, being a teenager at one point, obviously, that struggled with emotions and communicating my feelings well. Sometimes I think when kids act out in anger, behavior is communication, and there might be something deeper there as opposed to, I think if we label the behavior as mean or, you know, purposefully disruptive, it's just, it makes it hard to reach out and connect with the child, maybe. So that was my thought.
Okay. Several things. You're absolutely right. Obviously, as a shrink, I got to say that. I got to say, yeah, well, you know, there could be some factors here that are unknown. This is oftentimes, Lindsay, a game of probabilities. For example, here's mom with seven kids. only one of them, as her report says, has given her this kind of trouble. She said he's always kind of been this way. Do you remember her saying that?
Yes.
Okay. So if the theory is something is eating at him now, okay, that's a possibility. But she laid a little bit of groundwork. She said, yeah, he's always been defiant, just gotten worse the last year. And she used the word the last year. Okay. Now, I'm going to assume most of my callers are like you. They're just good people who truly care about raising their families. And I can assume she's probably, did you hear her say that she and her husband have had a lot of long discussions with him?
I did hear that, yes.
Mm-hmm. This is why I'm the host here, Lindsay. Okay, sorry. So again, I extrapolated from that they tried. They did their best. Now, when I called his behavior mean, it was. He's kicking things. He's slamming things. He's butting his little brother. That's mean. Now, whether it's his temperament or whether he, I think what it is, it's a combination temperament and the idea that he doesn't want to be forced into anything religious. Sounds like it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is his attitude is, okay, you're going to make me do that? Fine. I'll show you how unhappy I am about it. So that's kind of why I approached it that way. She said a number of things that would indicate this is more of a pattern than something that was eating at him. And here's another thing I would say. Just having talked to you, dear, in these few moments, and you said when you were a teenager and you had feelings and all of that, is there a difference between you and this young man as his mom described him? In other words, were you really kind of defiant, or was it more that things bothered you, and if somebody would have talked it out with you, that would have helped?
Yes, you are spot on there. But I think for me, I guess it's more, I had a brother who was a year and a half younger that acted in a way that this young man sounds like he's acting. And now that we're adults, understanding my brother better, I'm like, I had no idea. So I acted by, I withdrew, and he kind of rebelled. But that we were both kind of responding to the same circumstances. We just had a different way of coping, I guess.
Would you say that, you say that your mom and dad were instrumental in creating both of your reactions, and you both reacted according to your temperament? Would you say that their parenting or whatever it was in your family caused you guys to react this way?
What was the question? Was it my parents that caused?
Yeah, in other words, there was turbulence in your family, or there were problems within your family.
There was just some challenges, and I think the expectation, boys can get angry, and then girls can kind of like, it's okay if we're sad. So I don't know. It was just food for thought. You've brought up some good points though for me to think about.
But here's the interesting parallel there. In your home at that time, there was, as you identified it, some things going on where you by temperament retreated and your brother by temperament defied.
Yes.
The caller didn't give me, she could have been a bad mother.
You're
she
right.
could have been.
Yeah.
But she didn't give me an indication of that. I mean, she's got seven kids. You got to figure, okay, she welcomes children. She's got a 27 down to a five-year-old. She said her husband's on the same page with her. They have talked at great length with their son. So everything coming together in the puzzle seemed like, by his nature, he's just a little more resistant.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's fair. Thank you. And I think sometimes we put our own stories on other people. And so,
you know what, Lindsay?
I appreciate it.
You are dead on. You said that I was dead on, and I want to thank you for that, because I'm not used to hearing women tell me that. But you're dead on, because you're exactly right. What happens is, and most often when I'll get an email or somebody will disagree with me, they will say, this was my circumstance.
Right.
And you're right. They tend to interpret other situations through their own experience. One of the great advantages you have of being a shrink is that you've seen 1,000 experiences.
Sure.
And so you get a broader look. But you're absolutely correct. Lindsay, you're a delight. Yes. Thanks for the call. Thank you, dear.
Thank you so much. Okay,
right.
Bye-bye.
Bye, honey. Where is this? Mike, Cincinnati, 40 years ago, was diagnosed with what he remembers as a neurotic disorder episode. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Dr. Ray.
Now, do you remember anything more specific about that label?
No, I just remember it being written on some formal document.
Okay.
And this was actually 35 years ago.
So, was it a phobia? Was it a depressive episode? Was it, anxiety? What was it?
I think it was anxiety. You know, again, it was 35 years ago. I think my family overreacted. They took me to see somebody, and things just happened after that.
How old were you?
Oh, about 26 years old.
They didn't use the word psychotic, right?
No.
Okay.
No, in fact, after that episode, I began seeing the psychologist just to help me work through. And I did fall into a depressive state after that episode.
Okay.
Because it was a personal matter that I don't know that I should share.
Mike, is it still bothering you to this day? In other words, as you look back on it, okay, you just want some information about it.
Right. And I think the problem is, Dr. Ray, is I think it's put a stigma on me, and people look at me and say, you know, this is what happened to you 35 years ago. Do we need to be concerned about this again?
Huh. Well, that's a different level of question. Let me go at your first question. Neurotic disorder episode is a very, very broad, very vague label. It can encompass any one of a number of reactions, and the word episode implies that it was something rather circumscribed or acute. In other words, it wasn't long-term. It was something that was occurring at that point in your life. Maybe it was probably most common, some type of anxiety reaction. And the anxiety can create a ripple effect, if I can use that word again, because you start to become worried about what's wrong with you. Other people start to think something's wrong with you. Why is this happening? Maybe it affects your work, your life. So anxiety can do an awful lot of things to you. You talk to a psychologist, talked it through, worked it through. Okay. Now, anybody that would look at you now and say, well, you know, that happened 35 years ago, Mike, you know, that could rear its ugly head. How do we know that you're not going to get like that again? And you just look at them and say, well, you're going to know because it hasn't happened in 35 years. That's how you're going to know.
Well, it has, though. It has. And, you know, about 10 years after that episode, I had another episode. And then maybe another 10 years after that episode, I had another episode.
Are you talking anxiety?
So, you know,
an anxiety panic attack?
Yeah, I think it was more of an anxiety attack.
Okay.
And then me overreacting.
It's not unusual.
The police came at one point and hauled me off.
Okay, well, then you got more than anxiety involved. You must have got kind of violent.
No, I sat down in the road because the officer started threatening me.
You sat in the middle of the road?
No, by the curb.
Okay.
I did joke about being...
I think, Mike, somebody was thinking you weren't thinking straight.
Yes, I'm sure.
Okay. And if, in fact... And that's why I asked if it was a psychotic episode. In other words, anxiety is not psychosis. But sometimes psychosis has an anxiety component.
Okay.
So if you weren't thinking right and you had an episode and it was 10 years ago, hopefully the medication that you could be on right now, I'm assuming you may be on some, is stabilizing the situation. Is that accurate?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. At this point, I wouldn't worry too much about the neurotic disorder episode. If you're going to have any concerns, you worry about how you're conducting yourself now and make sure that you have a psychiatrist or someone that can monitor the situation so that the likelihood of it occurring is less. Thank you, Mike. I got to run. Dr. Ray Steven, when I come back, you're up next. You are listening to a least worst of the doctor is in. We have no best of.
Dr. Ray has more great advice coming up. Don't go anywhere. And that's a doctor's order.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This Easter, from 20th Century Fox and Franklin Entertainment comes Breakthrough, starring Chrissy Metz, based on a true story. When Joy Smith's son John falls through an icy Missouri lake, all hope seems lost. But a mother's belief in the power of prayer inspires her community to trust God to do the impossible.
Please, God, send your Holy Spirit to save my son.
Breakthrough, rated PG, parental guidance suggested. Now playing. Tickets and showtimes available at BreakthroughMovie.com.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In TV show, Living Right with Dr. Ray, soon to be starting its eighth season on EWTN Global Catholic Television Network, Saturday nights at 10 Eastern. Stephen, Georgia. Here's what I know, Stephen. Your wife and you have been reported to CPS, Child Protective Services. Your daughters have a medical condition. You gave them too much medication accidentally, inadvertently. They went to the hospital first time you were cleared, and now it's happening again. What is the situation, Stephen? We got about 2.5 minutes. I'm sorry to cut you so short.
Oh, that's okay. Hi, doctor. It's not that we gave them too much medicine. We had kind of been accused of that. Like I said, both my kids have complex medical problems. They both have the same kind of a genetic issue. And so they both have a lot of specialists because it affects multiple organ systems. And so we have a lot of extended hospitalizations and things with both of my children. And so like I said earlier, that we did get cleared the first time. They found that there was no problems, and so they left us alone. We've been reported a second time just this in the last week or so. So I don't know if it's just somebody is maliciously doing this against my family and trying to take my kids away.
That can happen if you've got someone that's antagonistic toward you and they don't really like the way you're raising your children, even though you're doing nothing wrong or neglectful. So you've been reported again. They are obligated to investigate, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Are you thinking you're in danger of being found neglectful?
I really don't think so, because we're doing nothing different from the last time. It's just we've had, like this last year, we had a lot of issues with my kids' health, so we've had a lot of more extended stays than normal. We have to travel far out of town and to go see doctors and things. And I'm just kind of concerned that the last time the agent was actually pretty understanding and willing to listen. This one's like they want us to come like immediately, and we had like some tests and things that were long planned out of the hospital, so we couldn't just turn around and leave. Like I said, we're far out of town from our home. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't at least understanding about that. I'm just kind of concerned that if she's going to have an attitude already up front, like what can they do to us? How can we protect our kids? Or what recourse do we have?
Be cooperative. Be pleasant. Show yourself to be concerned, caring, loving parents. They're not oftentimes used to dealing with folks like that. If you become hostile and resistive, it's only going to hurt you. My thought is whoever is turning you in is somebody who knows you quite well. Someone in your close social circle. Because how would anybody else know what you are doing right. regarding these children's medical conditions? You have trouble with in-laws. You have trouble with a parent, a brother, a sister, someone that looks at your parenting and says, you're just way out of whack. Hey, I just noticed the clock. I got to run, but I was just throwing those questions out for your pondering. This is Dr. A. Thank you so much for your company. Walk with God. Hold your children tightly by the hand. Thank you.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.